So if Papa wanted to do like the Mishnah, he wanted to blow Shofar and Chatzotzos together. Amar le Rav alo amar ela b'mikdash. Tanya nami hachim v'med v'amamurim b'mikdash. Aval b'gvulin, mokam sheyesh Chatzotzos ein Shofar, mokam sheyesh Shofar ein Chatzotzos. V'chein hinhig Rabbi Chalafta b'tzipori v'Rav Chananya ben Trajan b'sichnei. K'shvod Rabbi Yitzchak amar l'loy enog ken ela b'shari Mizrach u'bahara b'ayetz bovad. So the first Gemara tells us that the only time we blow the shofar and the chatzotzos together is in the mikdash. Then we're told by the chachamim that it's only b'shari mizrach and harabais. It's just to get the terms down. Mikdash, let's assume for now, we'll see, it's going to be a little bit of a discussion. Let's assume for now that mikdash means the beis hamikdash. Harabais is not just the beis hamikdash, it's the entire temple mount. That's why there's a big debate nowadays about going on to Har HaBayis, because you're allowed to go on to Har HaBayis technically, you're just not allowed to go into the Makom HaMikdash. The question is, do we know where the Makom HaMikdash is, and which is just the general part of Har HaBayis? Even within the Beis HaMikdash complex, there were places where Tameh was able to go. So we have the term here, Mikdash. We have the term Har HaBayis. Then we also have Shaar HaMizrach. Shaar HaMizrach means the eastern gate, or the eastern entrance into the Beis HaMikdash complex, which was by the Ezras Nashim. That gate right outside the Ezras Nashim is called the Shaar HaMizrach, and that's seemingly a different location, or a very specific location. So what does the Gemara here mean? Ela b'shari mizrach u'har habayis. Amar Rava, what's the reason why the only place you blow both the chatzotzos and the shofar? Now, does this mean it's the only place you're allowed to, or it's the only place where there's a chiyuv? The Gemara said, but malkum shei shofar ein chatzotzos. Does that mean you're not allowed to blow both? Or it means there's no chiyuv to blow both. So he quotes from a pasuk, b'chatzotzos v'kol shofar hariu lifnei ha-melech Hashem. Lifnei ha-melech Hashem hu deba'in chatzotzos v'kol shofar aval ba'amalo. It's only in an area that's described as lifnei Hashem. Now, first of all, just in general, where would they congregate to daven on Har HaBayis? So the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tanios that they used to congregate outside the...
Was it? Itself.
What do you mean?
Daven, Har HaBayis.
Okay, but they did used to pray. And where would they congregate? Let's say for on a... In other words, forgetting about the daily davening, even let's say on a Tanis. The Rambam writes on a Tanis when they would institute special prayers in order to daven to Hashem for the rain. So they used to congregate outside the Shaar Mizrach, the Rambam writes. Right outside of the entrance, the Ezras Nashim, the Shaar Mizrach, that's where they used to congregate to pray. Now Rashi here says that that could be what's going on. Rashi brings two deos here. It could mean that we mean Shaar HaMizrach in Har HaBayis, on the Har HaBayis, Shaar HaMizrach b'Har HaBayis, and we're talking specifically right outside. There was a large staircase that went up from outside up into the Ezras Nashim by the Shaar HaMizrach. So it could mean like the Rambam, that's Rashi's first day, like the Rambam, that they would congregate outside the Ezras Nashim. But then Rashi brings another deya that maybe it means also within the Ezras Nashim. So a little bit of a discussion here about where exactly they used to pray, but it sounds like we're talking about blowing the shofar. Lifnei Hashem means in this area in the Mikdash right outside the Ezras Nashim. Now the Turei Evan here asks from other halachos, because the phrase of Lifnei Hashem is seemingly going to mean different things in different locations. The first place that the Turei Evan quotes from is the din of Shchutei Chutz. If you look throughout Sefer Vayikra, whenever we're talking about a karban, the pasuk always says Lifnei Hashem. V'shachar apar Lifnei Hashem. That pasuk comes up a number of times, and whenever we're talking about karbanos, it's always stated Lifnei Hashem. And sure enough, when the Torah then describes the Isser of Shchutei Chutz, the Isser of Shechting, we know that it's usher to shecht chulin inside the Beis HaMikdash, and it's usher to shecht a karbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. So what area constitutes what I just said is outside the Beis HaMikdash? What's considered shchutei chutz, outside? So, in general, it's important to know that whenever we're talking about karbonos, the avoda has four elements to it that are considered me'ikar ha'avoda. We have shchita, kabbalas hadam, Holachas Adam, and Zrika. Now, out of those four parts of the Avoda, all of them need to be done by a Kohen except for the Shechita. The Shechita is allowed. Shechita is Kasher Bizar. Now, the Shechita not only the Shechita, but even the stage before Shechita, which is Smicha, the Gemara learns that even the Smicha needs to be done in the Azara. It needs to be done within the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. And if it was done on Har HaBayis, even the Smicha itself, and there were areas for a Zayar to be able to come in to do the Shechita, so even the Smicha needs to be done within the Azara. And if it's done on the Har HaBayis, it's considered Shchutech, it's considered a psul in the Smicha. And the Shechita done on Har HaBayis is already considered Shchutei Chutz. So when it comes to the din of Shchutei Chutz, and we say it needs to be done Lifnei Hashem, Har HaBayis is out. You can't do it on Har HaBayis. And yet the Turei Avin notes that, and the Gemara here says explicitly, that blowing the shofar with the Chatzotos was done on Har HaBayis because of the Pasuk of Lifnei Hashem. So does Lifnei Hashem include Har HaBayis or does it not? So the Turei Avin starts off with a question from Shchutei Chutz. However, he then notes Akasha in the other direction, when it comes to Bikurim. The Pasuk says, Tavi Beis Hashem, and the din is that as soon as it's brought into Yerushalayim, the Bailim are no longer Chayav Ba'achrayos because they fulfilled Tavi Beis Hashem. So I know Lifnei Hashem and Beis Hashem might be different, but the Turei Avin says, Beis Hashem, which seemingly refers to Beis HaMikdash, and it includes Yerushalayim. So he leaves it off. He leaves it off as a, for the din of Bikurim. For Bikurim, it's all of Yerushalayim. That once it's brought to all of Yerushalayim, right? Not just Har HaBayis.
No, I think that's the one.
Does he say?
Let's see. That's quoted by.
Oh, you're right. Yes, Har HaBayis. Yes, Har HaBayis. So when it comes to Bikurim, as soon as it's brought to Har HaBayis, he's already Yotzei Lifnei Hashem. When we're talking about Shchutei Chutz, that's not considered Lifnei Hashem. So the Turei Avin is just raising the question. He doesn't tell us. And the Aruch Laner adds another point. That's now Yerushalayim. Right. The Aruch HaNer notes that when we're talking about Maaser Sheni, the Pasuk says, V'yachalta lifnei Hashem. It's the Lashon of the Pasuk. And we know that for Maaser Sheni and for Revai, the din is that you can eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim. So we have three different halachos, and in the three different halachos, what's the fourth one? Oh, so yeah, we'll get there in a second, right? V'samachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem. There's a special halacha that even though Midyoraisa, just a very quick background, even though Midyoraisa, the Pasuk says, L'chachtem l'chem b'yom ha-rishon, we think that the mitzvah of lulav's only b'yom rishon, the Pasuk adds, but usmachtem l'fnei Hashem l'keichem shivas yomim, that there's a special din, that when you're in the geographic region known as Lifnei Hashem, usmachtem l'fnei Hashem, there is a mitzvah of lulav for 7 days. And there are people who travel to the Kotel every day of Sukkot nowadays with their lulav and esrog in order to be mekayim the mitzvah of smachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivas yom. So we have a question here of what is the definition of lifnei Hashem. So the Aruch Laner leaves it off as a question and says apparently they must have had a Kabbalah of in which halachos we say lifnei Hashem means this and which halachos we say lifnei Hashem is that. But we're going to leave it for now as a. What does he say? He says Tzarech Lomar to bechol makom haya Kabbalah b'zeh be'ezim makomos is going to be called Lifnei Hashem.
By Meiser we have a Kabbalah that happens to be.
Kabbalah means that we have a tradition.
I'm saying where we are in the Masorah that he was first asking how could the Torah have asked what he asked, and at the end he validated and said it was okay that he asked what he asked. Because where we don't have a Masorah for it, there Lifnei Hashem is not.
No, I think what he means is that we see at least three different halachos where Lifnei Hashem means different things, and it must be that they had a Kabbalah of how to be Mekayim, the Pasuk of Lifnei Hashem. When it came to the halacha of Shchutei Chutz, it meant it had to be in the Azara. When it came to the halachos of Bikurim, it meant Har HaBayis. And when it came to Maaser Sheni, each one, there was a different Masorah of how to be Mekayim, this idea of Lifnei Hashem. Now, it's interesting, when you look at the Rambam, because we have a Mishnah in the fourth parak of our Masechta. The very, very beginning of the fourth parak tells us, Yom Tov Shal Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos B'Mikdash Hayitoken Aval Lo B'Medina. So they used to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, but only B'Mikdash and not B'Medina. So what does this mean, Mikdash V'Lo B'Medina? So Rashi says, Mikdash means the Beis HaMikdash. Medina means Yerushalayim and everywhere else in the country. That's the Shita of Rashi. That Mikdash only means Mikdash. That's the Pashtus of the words. However, the Rambam in Perisha Mishnayis on this mission, the very beginning of the fourth parak, says Mikdash means all of Yerushalayim. And when we have a special din to blow on Shabbos, where we blow the shofar on Shabbos, for when Rosh Hashanah Chal Yos B'Shabbos, it means all of Yerushalayim. The truth is the Rambam is a little bit of a question, because in three different locations, just within a few pages of each other, the Rambam's Hadar is not 100% clear. The Rambam says in the very beginning of Hilchos Shofar, this is Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis, B'mikdosh hayu tokin b'Rosh Hashanah b'Shofar and with the Chatzotzros. And why would they blow with both? Because the Pasuk says, Lifnei HaMelech Hashem, Aval b'shar mikomos, they only blew with the Shofar. So here the Rambam just says Mikdosh. Seemingly he means Beis HaMikdosh. That's all he says. In the Mikdosh, he doesn't define for us what he means by Mikdosh. In Hilchos Lulav, sorry, a little bit later first, in Hilchos Shofar, Kishagazru shlo litzko b'Shabbos, lo gazru el b'makom she'ein bo beisdin, aval b'zman shaya ha-mikdosh kayyam, haya beisdin ha-gadol b'Yushalayim, and they would be token b'Yushalayim. So when it comes to the first mission, the fourth parak, when it said Mikdosh, the Rambam says that means all of Yerushalayim. Even though he just said Mikdash in the very beginning regarding blowing the shofar in the Chatzotzros, when it comes to blowing on Shabbos, he says very clearly Yerushalayim. And then, this is what Dr. Zitter was making reference to, when you get to Hilchos Lulav, Mitzvahs Lulav, this is in Perek Zayin, Halacha Yud Gimel, Mitzvahs Lulav li natel biyom rishon shachag bilvad b'chol makum b'chol zman, b'yafilu b'Shabbos. U'b'mikdash levado, in the Mikdash, they would note lino so b'chol yom b'yom mishivas yemeachag. That's all he says. Just he says Mikdash. So, by blowing shofar in Chatzotzos, he says Mikdash. By Lulav, he says Mikdash. When it comes to Rosh Hashanah Shechal Yos B'Shabbos, he says Mikdash v'shar Yerushalayim, based on Agadah B'Yerushalayim. So it's a little bit unclear of how the Rambam defines things here. So Rabbeinu Manoach, in his Perish here, he tries to make shalom between all the Rambams. And he says, it says, Haril Lifnei HaMelech Hashem, which is Mikdash, Klomar, Toch Yerushalayim. He thinks that the Rambam is going to be the same in all these different halachos. So whenever the Rambam says Mikdash, he means Yerushalayim, as he tells us later in Hilchos Shofar, that it means Yerushalayim. And that's what Rabbeinu Manoach holds, that whenever it says Mikdash, it means Yerushalayim. And this is the Rambam Shita, that Mikdash means Yerushalayim. And therefore he says, when it comes to Shofar, when it comes to Lulav, it always means in Yerushalayim. Lifnei Hashem, that would make it, that Lifnei Hashem means all of Yerushalayim, though. That doesn't mean just Mikdash. Right.
It says Mikdash was Kayim, it means Yerushalayim was Kayim.
Whereas when the base of Mikdash was Kayim, then all of Yerushalayim is considered Lifnei Hashem. Right, so the question is nowadays, what happens to the status of Yerushalayim nowadays according to the Rambam? Is all of Yerushalayim still Lifnei Hashem? Or is it only when the base of Mikdash is standing? So then the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash makes the entire Yerushalayim into Lifnei Hashem, that you're in the presence of Hashem. But nowadays, if there's no Beis HaMikdash, so Yerushalayim is not Lifnei Hashem. So what about Makom HaMikdash? Is Makom HaMikdash? See, that's a little bit of the discussion nowadays. Is there a point nowadays to coming to the Makom HaMikdash? Is it considered Lifnei Hashem, or is Lifnei Hashem dependent on the Beis HaMikdash standing? Okay. This was regarding the limud here of Lifnei Hashem. Gemara continues, has an interesting discussion here about tefillah. Shava Yovel Rosh Hashanah L'tkiyah L'brachos. The Mishnah told us that the tefillah of Yovel is shava to Rosh Hashanah, both for tekiyos and brachos. This is a great trivia question. People ask, what's the longest Shemoneh Esrei of the year? So people normally assume that it's Musaf of Rosh Hashanah because of Machios, Zichronos, and Shofros. The truth is, that's not the right answer. The right answer, seemingly, is the Musaf of the Yovel year of Yom Kippur. Because the Yom Kippur davening has in it all of the Vidoy. But at the Yovel year, they used to also say Machios, Zichronos, and Shofros on Yom Kippur. Normally, Yom Kippur, we don't say Machios, Zichronos, and Shofros on the Musaf of Yom Kippur. We have a shorter Musaf. But the truth is that there were certain fast days, that the Gemara says, that they also, after a certain number of fasts getting more intense and more intense, they would actually add Machios, Zichronos, and Shofros into a fast day, I believe. But certainly the Yovel davening, and the Rambam paskens this lahalacha, it was funny, I was learning with a boy in Shalvim this year, we were learning Hilchos Tefillah, and the Rambam just goes through the very basic halachas of Tefillah. So he said to me, you know, why we're learning a chavrusa, two halachas a day. He said, why are we learning this? Like, we know all of these halachas. So, all right, let's do one more day, and then maybe, you know, we'll switch to something new the next day. And that day, we learned the Rambam, where the Rambam says that the Yovel Musaf, on the 50th year, on the Yovel year, they used to say Machios, Zichronos, and Shofros. So he said, okay, I didn't know that before, so maybe we'll continue with with Hilchos Tefillah. But that's what the Mishnah here says. The Mishnah says the davening of Rosh Hashanah and the davening of Yovel, the Musaf, corresponded one to another, and they would blow the shofar, and they would do all of the Seder of Machios, Achronos, and Shofros. So Gemara has an interesting discussion. Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak says that we notes that we say in davening Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon, that today is the day that commemorates Tchilas Masecha, and it's a remembrance of the first day of creation. So the Gemara notes that this seemingly indicates that we paskin like Rebbe Eliezer. There's a machlokas between Rebbe Yoshua and Rebbe Eliezer about when was the world created. Was it created in Tishrei, or was it created in Nisan? So the fact that in the Rosh Hashanah davening we say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon implies that we're paskin like Rebbe Eliezer. So the Gemara asks that our Mishnah seemingly disagrees with this statement of the Gemara. Because our Mishnah says that the davening of Rosh Hashanah and the davening on the Yovel are the same. That would mean that on the Yovel year in Musaf, we would also say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. And how could that be? It's 10 days later. That's not a commemoration of the day of creation. The day of creation was Rosh Hashanah, not Yom Kippur. So how could we say in the Yom Kippur davening Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon? And therefore, the Gemara, the Pashas, the Gemara, is that what the Gemara is saying is that it must be that our Mishnah holds that you don't say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon, not in Rosh Hashanah, and not in Yovel. It sounds like there's a machlokas. Do we say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon? The Gemara assumes that we do say it, and therefore it's a raya for Rebbe Eliezer, and that's why we have a problem. And our Mishnah, which Rav Ina is quoting, our Mishnah holds that you do not say it. And then the Gemara ends up saying, no, the davening is the same except for that line. Rabbeinu Tam, though, did not like that understanding of the Gemara because Rabbeinu Tam thought that that assumes that we hold like Rebbe Eliezer and we're trying to work out everything like Rebbe Eliezer. But Rabbeinu Tam is of the opinion that we paskin like Rebbe Yoshua, and he brings a raya from earlier in the Masechta that we paskin like Rebbe Yoshua, that the first day of creation was not in Tishrei, but it was rather in Nisan. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam learns the Gemara differently. The Gemara was not discussing whether we say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. By the way, the Ritva is the one, if you look at the Ritva in the Sugya, he's the one who fleshes out what Rabbeinu Tam thought the Pashas the Gemara was and what his Chiddush is. And Rabbeinu Tam says that everybody agrees we say Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. Okay, this is the way I read the Gemara originally. But after seeing Rabbeinu Tam in the Ritva, so I realized there was another way to read the Gemara. Rabbeinu Tam says everybody agrees we say the word Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. The machlokas is what that line means. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion, and that's what our Gemara assumes at first, that that means that we are commemorating the day of creation. Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. It's commemoration of creation. Comes along Rav Ina and asks from our Mishnah, how could you say that on Yom Kippur? And therefore, the Kamash Malan of Rav Ina is that that it doesn't mean creation. Rather, what does it mean? It means this is the beginning of Din. That it's not commemorating creation, but rather our Tana learns that it means Din. And therefore we say it on Rosh Hashanah, we say it on Yom Kippur, because they're both Yemei Din, and therefore there's no problem saying it on both. If you learn like Rebbe Eliezer, it's a problem to say it on both. But we learn like Rebbe Yoshua. And therefore Rebbe Yonatan says that even though the Gemara answers up and says, okay, we don't say that, don't worry about that line, but Rav Ina didn't accept that lahalach. He didn't accept the answer of the Gemara. The answer of the Gemara is dachok, according to Rabbeinu Tam. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam thinks that lahalach we paskin like Rabbi Yoshua, and that means the line of Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon, which we do say in davening, is not referring to creation, but rather it's referring to din. And the truth is, if you look in the Mefarshim and the Siddur, in the Rishonim, you get different perspectives on what this line means, Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha Zikaron Yom Rishon. The Machzor Vitri says that it means the beginning of creation. But the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Tam say that no, it means when you're davening on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha, it's not supposed to mean creation. It's supposed to be, this is the beginning of Din. And it reflects this machlokas, Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Yoshua.
We're reading Yom Kippur as Yom
Tchilas. So you're saying because it's a little later on in the process. Anyway, I guess it would have to mean the entire process of Din. But it's a good point. Tchilas, that would be a problem because of the stress in the word tchilas. The last thing I'd like to talk about today, which is going to take us a few minutes, and that's the...
One more hour on this with Yovel.
Yeah, please.
They're all dealing with Yovel at a time. It's not their eyes.
because they were no longer the Shemitos, were no longer, right. So there is a machlokas Rishonim about when Yovel applies. Is it Tali on Dias Kulchem and the other laws that we have of Mitzvos Hatzluyos, of Mitzvos Hatzluyos Barts, like Shemitah, or it might be dependent on, there's another opinion about whether it's dependent on the Shemitah. Right, exactly.
Let's not go there.
Right. Okay. The end of Tosfos. So Tosfos here has a discussion, a famous line here in Tosfos from Rabbi Yezer HaKalir. Rabbi Yezer HaKalir, as we know from Tisha B'Av. So he wrote a lot of the piyutim and a lot of the different tefillos that we say. And Rabbi Yezer HaKalir wrote a tefillah for Geshem. And in the tefillah for Geshem, I do not believe it's the same tefillah for Geshem that we say nowadays. I don't think that was written by Rabbi Yezer HaKalir, and I don't think that this line that they're referring to is there. But in the tefillah Rabbi Yezer HaKalir for Geshem, he paskins seemingly like Rabbi Yezer. As you know, Rabbi Yezer HaKalir, it's a little bit of a debate about when he lived and who he was exactly. The Bali Tosfos make reference to him as if he's like a Tana and hold him in very, very high regard. And it's a big debate about when exactly he lived. Anywhere from being a Tana or a Mora to being a very early Rishon. But Rabbi Yezer HaKalir, as Tosfos points out, says that in Tfilas Geshem, he makes the implication, Tfilas Geshem, which we say Shmini Atzeres, and the time period of Tishrei, so he makes a reference there as if we're commemorating the creation of the world. And sounds like he's passing Rabbi Yezer that the world was created in Tishrei. However, when in the piyut that he wrote for the Yotzros for Pesach, he also makes a reference to the creation of the world, seemingly passing like Rabbi Yoshua. So do we paskin like Rabbi Yezer, or does he paskin like Rabbi Yezer, or does he paskin like Rabbi Yoshua? So Tosfos here has a famous line, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. The world was created at both times. They're both correct. How can they both be correct? How can the world be created both in Tishrei and in Nisan? So he says, it was olo b'machshava to create the world in Tishrei, but the world wasn't actually created until Nisan. Now, hopefully at the end of Shir, we'll try to give a little suggestion. What can that possibly mean, that Hashem thought to create the world in Tishrei, and he ended up, right, obviously before the world was created, there were no months, there was no time. What does it mean he thought to create the world in Tishrei, and ended up creating the world in Nisan? But that's what Tosfos suggests, and it allows for us a little bit of a springboard to discuss this whole sugya of Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And probably the most famous Gemara about this is the Gemara in Erevin, where the Gemara tells us, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanam Nechru Beishamu Beisila. Halalu omri malach kumosenu, halalu omri malach kumosenu. For years, 3 years, Beishamay Beisil argued over who was correct. Finally, Yatsa Basko, v'amra, Elu v'eru dibleru kim chayim, v'halacha ki Beis Hillel, and the halacha is like Beis Hillel. This is an interesting discussion, first of all, this is an interesting gemara for the discussion of lo b'shamayim hi. Nechetesi, and this is Tosfos asks this in the Gemara of Metzia that says, by the Tanur Shel Achnai, Elu v'elu dibleru kim chayim. So Tosfos asks right from this Gemara in Erevin, how can we decide who halacha is like based on a basko? But that's not our issue for today. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If it's true that both are the words of Hashem, so what does it mean that we pass them like Beis Hillel, if they're both Dibrei Elokim Chayim? So the Gemara answers, Mipnei Shenochin Ve'aluvin Hayu, V'shonin Divrayen V'Divrei Beis Shammai, V'lod Elishamagdimen Divrei Beis Shammai V'Divrayen. So seemingly what the Gemara is saying is that they had better midos. They were more noach, oluv, they were respectful, they would treat Beis Shammai's words and quote Beis Shammai's words before their own, and quotes there the discussion about Rosh HaVerubo B'Sukkah. The Gemara suggests that that's the reason why the halacha was nikba like Beis Hillel. So what does this mean, Elu v'Elu v'Divrei Elokim Chayim? So, and there are other Gemaras. Marn Chagiga talks about Kulam Nasnu Meroa Echad, all the different opinions, they all come from Moshe Rabbeinu. So what does this mean, Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim? Is this just like a nice, fluffy concept or idea? Or is there really, does it really mean everybody's correct? So, there are two main approaches to this. One is quoted by the Chida. The Chida quotes from a sefer called Harei Nimarim. I'm not sure exactly who wrote it, but it's a collection of klalim in the Talmud. And the Chida quotes this in a number of places in his Svarim, and he says that what it means, Elu v'Elu Dibrei Elokim Chayim, it's like the E for effort approach. That somebody's right, and somebody's wrong. But it's important
to have the wrong opinions also, because through the analysis and through the discussion, you're able to get to the truth better. It's trial and error, and one person suggests something, and someone else suggests something. We're able to reject people. And to be able to Kim Chaim doesn't mean it's true. It means it's all good. It's all valuable. It's all important that other opinions are suggested.
What does that mean? It's like a fake. It's like everyone's a winner. Well, the mice is one winner.
So what it means is that in part of the process of getting to truth, you need to explore possibilities. Some of them will be wrong. But the goal is to arrive at the truth. And the way you arrive at the truth is through suggesting things and making mistakes. Right? The Gemara in Erevin says a person doesn't really accomplish in a sugi if he first makes mistakes. And we know that in any process that there's a trial and error that allows us to get to the truth. So those are all valuable steps. One would even say, right, if I was like a brisker, so I would say, it even has a cheftz of Torah because it's part of the process. We even make a birchas haTorah on it, even though it's wrong, because it allows us to get to the truth. The Nesivos, in his introduction to his Sefer, he also sounds a little bit like this, that it's important to make mistakes, even though there are mistakes. So that's one approach of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim. It's trying to validate and give value even to the incorrect positions. However, the Ritva and Erevin has a famous discussion, where the Ritva and Erevin on this Gemara, the Ritva quotes from the Rabbani Tzarfat, which is, we've assumed, the Bali Tosfos, and he quotes there from the Rabbani Tzarfat that he quotes that the Gemara says, or it's really from a Medrash, that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shemayim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him 49 ways to be Metaher and 49 ways to be Metamei Sheretz. Normally we assume that a Sheretz is Tamei. That's the Halacha. But Moshe Rabbeinu was showed 49 ways using halachic arguments to be Metaher or Sheretz. So what does that exactly mean?
49 is an interesting number because we've learned in Erevin that it was 48. So.
Okay, so all right. That's interesting. That's a good Ara. So what does this mean? Oh, and then the end of that, Chazal say that even though there are 49 ways to be Metaher and 49 ways to be Metameh, the Hachra was given over to the Rabbanim. And Loba Shamayim he, and Chazal were given the ability to be Machriya. So what exactly does that mean? So the pashtus of what that means is what the Ramban writes in his Hakdama to the Sefer Mechamos Hashem. The Ramban, when he comes to defend the Mechamos Hashem, he's defending the honor of the Rif from the Hasagos of the Baal HaMaor. So he writes that, I want you to know that everything the Baal HaMaor says against the Rif, none of his rayas are muchrach, and all of my rayas against the Baal HaMaor are not muchrach, because the nature of Torah, he says, his lashon is not the same. Let me see what the exact words that he uses. He says, it's clearly a reference to mathematics and science. Kigon she'ein b'chochma hazos mofes, kigon cheshbonei hatishboros v'nisyonei hatchuna. Which I think is, tishboros, is that geometry? I think it's geometry. And tchuna means astronomy. And his point here is that when it comes to science, 2 plus 2, so there's certain things that are just, there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong. But when it comes to this chachma, meaning the chachma of Torah, it's not the same as mathematics, where something is absolutely right and something is absolutely wrong. And he goes on to say that there oftentimes, in trying to get to a position in Torah, there are going to be rayas one way and rayas another way. And the job of the chacham is to decide which rayas he thinks are going to win the day, even though there are going to be indications in the other way as well. And the mashal, the maral, discusses this as well. And the maral, I put on your source sheet, the maral says, if someone asks you what makes a tree grow, so one person's going to say water, one person's going to say sun, one person's going to, he says, that one person's going to say that the wind blowing on the sapling strengthens it and gives it the ability to grow. And he says, and none of them are incorrect. Now, if you had to decide what is the ikker of what's going to cause the tree to grow, you might have to make a decision. It doesn't mean that the other opinions are incorrect. The way I like to say it, the mushal I like to give is a doctor. If someone goes to a doctor and wants to get to decide what type of surgery to do for a certain ailment, one doctor might say one type of surgery. Another doctor might say another type of surgery. It's not that one is right, and if you do that surgery, you live, and if you don't, you die, and the other surgeon is wrong. It could be both surgeries will fix the problem. The first surgery might be less expensive, and it might have a shorter recovery, And the second surgery might be much more expensive. It might require a longer recovery. It might be more painful. But at the end of the day, it also is correct in the sense that it could solve the problem as well. And sometimes even with you know, trying to build something, there are multiple ways to build it. One way might be slightly better than the other one, but it's not that one is right and one is wrong. And that's what the standard explanation here is, that Torah is complex, and therefore there are multiple ways to arrive at truth. And that's what it means. Elu v'elu dibrei Elokim chayim. It's interesting, based on these two approaches to Elu v'elu dibrei Elokim chayim, you would have to understand the Gemara and Erevin differently, right? The Gemara and Erevin asked, so why did we end up siding with Beis Hillel? So if you learn like the Rabbani Tzarfat, so I understand, meaning Beis Hillel has an element of truth to him, Beis Shammai has an element of truth to him, so why were we machria like Beis Hillel? Because Beis Shammai also has an element of truth, and could also even be argued that he is correct. So why do we pass him like Beis Hillel?
Nice.
So the Gemara answered, because of the way he treated Beis Shammai, that's the reason why we decided to go with Beis Hillel, because Beis Shammai also objectively is true. So according to the Rabbani Tzarfat, we understand the Gemara in Erevin. But according to the other approach, the approach of the Sivos, the approach that's quoted to the Chidah, where one is true and one is not true, so what do you mean that we paskin like Beis Hillel because they're nicer? And they, who cares who's nicer if we're talking about one is true and one is not true? So you'd have to read the Gemara a little differently there. The Gemara actually says, and some suggest, the Gemara says that they were makdim Beis Shammai to Beis Hillel. Doesn't mean in Midos that they first quoted Beis Shammai and then they said their own opinion. But it means that they actually analyzed Beis Shammai. In other words, Beis Shammai came to his own conclusions, and that was his conclusion. But Beis Hillel would always first accept Beis Shammai's perspective, analyze Beis Shammai's perspective, and sometimes they agreed with it, and sometimes they came to their own conclusion. And it's not a statement about Midos, but it's a statement about the way that they analyze things, that the Beis Shammai only looked at their own perspective and didn't consider Beis Hillel's perspective. But Beis Hillel came to the truth more often because they always considered Beis Shammai's perspective and sometimes agreed with Beis Shammai. And therefore, the Beis Hillel were more often correct than the Beis Shammai because they were willing to be humble and to take Beis Shammai's position into account. Now, there is a in-between perspective. I think it's an in-between perspective, and it's something that's suggested by Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Hakdamah to his Shaios and Shuvos, Igros Moshe. And he starts off, and the Ran in the Drashos actually says this regarding the Tanur Shel Achnai. So maybe we'll start with this. We know the famous Gemara of the Tanur Shel Achnai in Bava Metzia, when there was a machlokas between Rabbi Yezer HaGadol and the other Chachamim about whether the specific Tanur was Tameh or whether it was Tahor. So Rabbi Yezer HaGadol had his position. I believe he was Metaheret. And the Chachamim said that it was Tameh. And Koach de Teira Adif, he was a big, big Talmud Chacham.
Really right.
And he was arguing that it was Tahor. And they argued. And he said, brought a raya, and he started to say that the walls, he started to say that the carob tree and the river, he started to bring all these rayas, the walls of the Beis Medrash will prove that I'm right. And all these miracles were taking place to try to show, to concur with the opinion of Rebbe Eliezer. Even a baskol came down that said Rebbe Eliezer is right. And yet, the baskol said, Loba Shamayim. Rebbe Yoshua stood up on his feet and said, Loba Shamayim he. Even in the implication of the Gemara, and the Ran learns it this way, even though Rebbe Eliezer is correct, meaning Aliba de Emes, his arguments were better, that's how the Ramban would say it, the way that the Chidah would, that Rebbe Eliezer was actually right and the others were wrong, but the Halacha is like the Chachamim because Torah was given over to the Chachamim. And this is what the Ran says in his Perishta. The Ran says it's not that it could have gone either way and we go with the Chachamim because they're the Rov. Aliba de Emes, Rebbe Eliezer was correct, but the halacha is nonetheless that we go with the rov. It's interesting. By Kiddush HaChodesh, we say that even in Metzias, we learned this Gemara earlier. We made reference to it earlier. The Gemara darshans that even if they make a mistake, we go with the psak of the Beis Din, even though astronomically it's not correct. The Rishonim bring up a whole discussion about a complicated case where a girl has relations, and we're not sure if she's three yet, and because of that, whether she's going to lose her ksuba because the bia is considered a bia, and the Beis Din made a psak based on the wrong thing, and the Gemara even suggests that because they made a In other words, there are important halachos that are going to come out about clarifying if today is the new month. Is today the 30th? Is it not the 30th? Is it the first of the month? And the Gemara says that this whole idea that Kiddush HaChodesh, even if they make a mistake, is not only regarding the halacha of Kiddush HaChodesh, but it reverberates to all other areas of halacha that are dependent on a date.
Even Rosh Hashanah, when Hashem judges the world.
Right. So Rav Moshe in Hakdama to Igros Moshe says, he has a whole long arichos about how justifying that he's paskening and that he's writing a sefer. How can he write it l'doros? It's one thing to pasken, it's another thing to write it in a sefer where people are going to pasken like it forever. And Rav Moshe, you should know, has a lot of kulos. He has a lot of chumras, but he also has a lot of kulos. There was a sefer that was put out called the Ma'ane l'Igros, which is a response to the Igros Moshe, where he takes Rav Moshe to task with very, very strong words. In fact, it was written so harifly that many people were very, very upset at this Rav who wrote it and rejected this Rav because he wrote so strongly against Rav Moshe. The Ma'ane l'Igros, the response to the Igros Moshe. But Rav Moshe is mechalik in his Hakdama between, he uses the terms of Emes l'Shamayim and Emes l'Hora. And he develops there that there's something which is the absolute truth. That's the Emes l'Shamayim. And he says, I cannot claim to have the Emes l'Shamayim. And if you needed Emes l'Shamayim to Paskin, I wouldn't write my Sefer. He says, but there's something else called Emes l'Hora, which in basic words means it's good enough. It's close enough to the truth. And the Ramba and Rav Moshe writes that in order to Paskin, you need Emes l'Hora. And he says that he feels that he knows enough of the truth in order to Paskin, even though he realizes that it's not the absolute truth. And I think that this might be a little bit of a nuanced approach to the Rabbani Tzarfat. When the Rabbani Tzarfat says that there are 49 ways to be 49 ways to be mitame, and it was given over to the Chachamim, it could be similar to what Rav Moshe is saying here about an Emes l'Hora. I'll just end with a very nice idea from Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein in his Sefer, the Baruch She'amar. The Torah Tmima wrote a Sefer called Baruch She'amar, and he notes there how Torah is described as a Shira. Kisvu l'cham is a Shira Hazos. And Torah there is referred to as a shira. So he says that just like with an orchestra, that you have all the different instruments, and together they're able to make a beautiful sound because of all the different instruments. There's a famous story with Toscanini. I don't know if you've ever heard of the story, where he was once listening. Oh, yeah. He was listening to an orchestra, and he wasn't able to see the orchestra. He was listening to the sound, and he was able to tell that there was one violinist missing from the orchestra because he was such an expert in music. And that's what he says, the Baruch Shammai says, is the Shira of Torah, is that all the different perspectives, both the right perspectives and the wrong perspectives, is that together that they form the orchestra or the Shira of Torah. And this idea of Elu v'Elu Dibre Elu Kim Chaim, though, in our context, is a little bit different. What happens when you get to a machlokas in Mitzias? Everything we've been talking about until now is very nice when it comes to halacha. There could be multiple truths. There could be different perspectives. What about when you have a machlokas and mitzias in the Gemara? The Gemara in the beginning of Gittin talks about Pilegesh Begiva. And it wants to know what set off that whole case. So it says there that he was disgusted by something that he saw on the woman. What did he see? So one opinion, without getting too graphic here, one opinion says that he saw a fly when he was involved with this woman. And one says that he saw a hair out of place. So that's a machlokas there in the Gemara. Was it a zvuv or was it a seah? So the Gemara there says, Elu v'elu dibrei Elokim chayim. So, well, which one was it? So the Gemara says he saw both. And the machlokas is just which one was the one that set him off more? Which one is the one that upset him? Did he first see the zvuv and then the hair was the one that broke that broke the camel's back? Or was it the opposite, that he first saw a hare and then he saw a zvuv? So in our context, and that's the question that I'm raising, what does it mean by Rabbi Yezer HaKalir, Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim? So the Gemara, Rabbeinu Tam's answer here reflects more how Elu v'elu is used in Mitzias. When we use it in the context of Mitzias, it means that they're both actually true, as opposed to in Halacha. So here, Tosfos says, he tries to work it out that they're both correct, that it was ola b'machshava. The way I would compare this to is, let's say, with the birth of a child. If you say, when was the child born? So there's conception, and then there's actual birth. So what is considered the creation of the child? Is it the birth, the physical birth, or is it the conception? That's sort of what Rabbi Ezra HaKalir is saying here. When was the world created? Well, was it created when Hashem thought up the idea of creating the world, or was it when the world was actually physically created? When we say in davening this, or when a person is celebrating or commemorating the creation of the world, do you commemorate when it was conceived or when it was actually created? I once heard from Rav Tversky a very beautiful idea, al derech hadrush, and I'll end with this. This and one last also just follow-up point about Elu V'Elu. The drush is very, very nice. What does it mean that Hashem thought to create the world in Tishrei, but didn't actually create it until Nisan? So Rav Tversky once, in the context of drush, noted that Tishrei is something that conjures up din, and Nisan is the time of rejuvenation and rebirth. And he says, just like the Gemara says that Hashem wanted to create the world bedin, but in the end, he ended up creating it with rachamim. What does that mean? Obviously, Hashem doesn't change his plans. So the Sfas Emes he quoted says that what it means, that olah b'machshava means that it's trying to tell you what Hashem sees as the ideal way to run the world. The ideal way to run the world is bedin. However, the actual way that the world needs practically to be run, we all know that sometimes you set something up ideally, but then when you get down bashetach, practically you need to run the world, you have to do things in a different way. And that's what Rav Tversky suggested, that when it says that Hashem, olu machshava, to create the world in Tishrei, means to run the world al pidin. That should be, if you mess up, so you get hit by a lightning bolt. But Hashem realized that that's not the ideal way to run the world. I mean, that might be the ideal, but practically, the world needs to be created in Nisan, meaning this idea of rejuvenation and rebirth and the opportunity to recreate yourself and to do tshuva. So I thought that was a very nice understanding of this concept. One last point. By the way, that there's a very nice gra that says that that's when Rabbi Akiva was complaining about his death. And Rabbi Akiva said, Zo Torah v'zo schara. When Rabbi Akiva was being killed, and the Talmidim said, Zo Torah v'zo schara. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Chazal tells, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Shtok. Kach ola b'machshavti. So the Gra says, what did Hashem mean? Kach ola b'machshavti. Meaning my machshava. What was my machshava? To create the world bedin. So what he was saying was that with Rabbi Akiva, I work with the Talmidei Chachamim, with the greatest people, I work with them, kichod hasara b'midas hadin. So when Hashem said, kach ol b'machshavti, he meant, don't ask questions on how I'm dealing with Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Akiva is held to the ideal, that the world is created bedin, even though practically the world was created b'rachamim. Last point, really the last point, is elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. The idea of elu v'elu divrei, the idea of elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim, sometimes is used to mean that everybody's entitled to an opinion. So Rav Schechter has said many times that it's true that we are open to many, many different opinions, but it's only if people have the right to an opinion. And a person needs to be a certain level of a Talmud Chacham in order to have the right to have an opinion. I was actually in Rav Schechter's shir when he told us that there was a certain Rav who was trying to push a certain issue, was trying to push the envelope on a certain issue, and he was speaking very loudly and making proclamations about how this is the Torah's opinion about this issue or that issue. And he said that the week earlier, that Rav had called him to ask him a very, very basic shaila about how to compute the days of Avelus, if the Avelus is going to end in time for Yontiv. And he said that it's something that was explicit in Shulchan Aruch. You just had to understand Shulchan Aruch in order to pass in the shaila. It wasn't a complex shaila. And he said that before a person's going to issue an opinion about what they think the spirit of the law is, the Ruach HaDvarim, you have to first understand the letter of the law in order to have a good opinion on what the spirit of the law is. And the Rav writes in his Common Sense Rebellion about Korach, I believe it's there, or it might be in Rabbi Rakefet's The Rav, two volumes, where he quotes from Shurim there, where the Rav said that he sees that a lot of people that learn in the yeshiva, they learn for a few years in the yeshiva, meaning in YU, and then afterwards they start issuing opinions on very, very serious topics. He said that if it was coming to building a bridge, I think was his example, someone who was just a first-year student or a second-year student in engineering school wouldn't start issuing an opinion about how to build the George Washington Bridge, or a person who's a first-year in medical school wouldn't start issuing opinions about how to do a complicated brain surgery. He said, but when it comes to Torah, everybody feels the right to give an opinion. So he says it's true that Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, but it really has to be that a person has enough knowledge to be able to issue an opinion. Okay. Everyone have a great day. Tomorrow, I'm not sure if it's tomorrow or the day after, one of the days, Rabbi Talbis is going to be giving a shiur. It's going to be tomorrow?
Yeah, it's since already.